August is Make a Will Month, and if TPR has made a difference in your life, consider making it part of your legacy. Visit tpr.org/legacy to learn how easy it can be to include Texas Public Radio in your estate plans.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The Matanza massacre of ethnic Mexicans along the southwest border in the early 20th century claimed anywhere from 500 to 5,000 lives, mostly in acts of state-sanctioned violence exacerbated by the 1915 Plan de San Diego, a short-lived revolt by ethnic Mexicans to take back the lands lost in the Mexican-American War. In 1 year alone, from July to November of 1915, up to 300 ethnic Mexicans were killed in four South Texas counties, Hidalgo, Cameron, Willacy, and Kennedy. No one was held accountable for their deaths. Their homicides have not been officially acknowledged by the state of Texas or county law enforcement. In many cases, their names are not known. Trinidad Gonzalez calls this an injustice of erasure. Gonzalez is a co-founder of Refusing to Forget, a public history project with a view to bring public awareness to this little-known chapter of Texas and U.S. history. Gonzalez has focused on that five-month period in 1915 and published a report that, for the first time, lists the names of the victims that are known and documents that support their identification and manner of death. Gonzalez says it's all a part of a broader effort to get the state of Texas to create a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
I sent a letter to Lieutenant Governor Patrick and Speaker of the House at the time, about three, 4 years ago, I think two legislative sessions ago, asking them to consider legislation for the creation of Truth and Reconciliation to look at state-sanctioned violence between 1836 to 1980 in the state of Texas, so of course a republic prior to being a state. I sent it with my rationales why it should be done, which is we cannot move forward as a society without truthfully confronting our past and reconciling that past with how we want to be as a community today. In that letter also included the names of the victims from the Porvenir massacre and La Matanza massacre that I was aware of. And I sent that letter. And the reason I included the names is because one of the shifts we've undergone, particularly Refusing to Forget, was to shift the conversation away specifically from the Plan de San Diego conflict and looking more at the state-sanctioned killing of individuals, both in La Matanza and, of course, outside the Matanza in 1910 to 1920. And so that Refusing to Forget focus, as the title indicates, is we refuse to forget the victims. And so we started naming the victims, and that's why I included the names in that letter to the Lieutenant Governor and Speaker of the House. Because these are individuals, these are fathers, these are brothers, these were sons, these were grandfathers. And we're talking about families, not just individuals who were killed. And more importantly, we wanted to point out that the mythology that they were bandits and they deserved to be killed was false. Even the state of Texas recognized in 1919, when they investigated the Rangers over these matters, that the killings were wrong. Back then, and of course, they're certainly wrong today.
And have you had any response from state leaders to your request? Any interest at all in acknowledging these deaths? No?
No, I didn't receive a response. I didn't think I was going to get a response, frankly, but you got to start pressing against the wall at some point, and I figured that would be a good first step just to begin the process. The report that we're going to be talking about, A Matter of Justice, is a part of that effort, but very localized. In this case, in the counties of Hidalgo, Cameron, Willacy, and Kennedy, we're going to try to have a conversation with the district attorneys of those respective counties to officially acknowledge the homicides, just to say, yeah, these people were killed. As far as the state of Texas is concerned, these individuals are still alive because there's no death certificates or records of their death. But the important thing here is to have the chief law enforcement officer of each county say, yeah, these individuals were killed. Not all of them were killed by Texas Rangers. Some were killed by local law enforcement. Some were killed by vigilantes. And, of course, some were killed by the Rangers. Part of this report, the main objective of this report is to present it to the district attorneys saying these homicides occurred. Would you please recognize them? The second objective for the report was to create a data set for further research by the community. In this case, I would hope that genealogists would look at the individual names and maybe do some genealogical work to see if we can locate their family histories for the individual's names that we do know. And for scholars, historians, you could take this data set and do more in-depth investigation of particular murders, or do a statistical analysis of how many murders were actually conducted by Texas Rangers based on the evidence we have as the likely suspects versus local law enforcement versus paramilitary or vigilante groups or paramilitary groups as they would be considered at the time. There's all sorts of things that can be done. I was going to do more research for the report, but I had to stop. For instance, I was going to try to track down everybody's names and see if I could find their gravesite. I did that for my family, of course, because I know where they've been buried since I was a child. So I knew how to identify their site early. And I did that with another family as well. But it was taking too much time to go cemetery by cemetery and looking for names based on what's online. I think it's called gravefinders.com. So I decided the report needed to come out before I could finish that task, right? And then there's this other issue of most of these individuals who were killed were landowners. And so what happened to the land? And in Texas, we have adverse possession, which is a law that states that you could go onto somebody else's property, and if they do not remove you from their property, after a few years, you can petition the court that that title that's clearly identified as the landowner be switched to the person who squatted on that land but was never removed. And this has been in state law, actually going back to 1836 with the Republic of Texas, and continue today. It's a legalized way of basically taking somebody else's property simply by occupying it.
Well, you brought up your family, and your family was directly impacted by the Matanza, and you have this list of people's names, like you mentioned earlier, who were killed in this period of time, July through November of 1915. And one of your ancestors is among them, and he and they are included on this report. Can you talk a little bit about them and the circumstances behind their deaths?
So two of my ancestors were killed by the Texas Rangers. That was my great-grandfather, Paulino Cerda, and his father, Don Anselmo Cerda. At this time, there is an insurgency, right? And everybody acknowledges that there's an insurgency, right? It's the last attempted effort by ethnic Mexicans to have sovereignty switched from the United States back to Mexico. And their reasons are very clear, right? These aren't peasant bandits or anything like that. They articulate their reason for the rebellion, and it's couched in previous complaints like Juan Cortina issued in his proclamation in 1859 about his rebellion. And there are essentially three of them, right? One, state-sanctioned violence, where the indiscriminate killing of civilians by law enforcement went with impunity, which means it was not punished. Two, the loss of land, or the taking of land through, and this is through this process called adverse possession, right? The myth that Mexicans didn't pay their taxes and then that somebody bought the property on tax sale, that's a myth. I mean, obviously that does occur and it's always going to occur, but the real process of switching land was through this legal method called adverse possession, right? And then third, people were not receiving the full citizenship rights in the United States, and therefore they said, well, if you're not going to treat us as equals, then why should we remain in this nation, right? It's very much like the American Revolution. However, the rebellion is a failed effort, right? Although there's 80 battles and skirmishes between insurgents and U.S. military, usually Texas Rangers went out in their Model Ts to people's homes and executed them either at their homes under questioning or removing them from a prison and killing them that way. It was very rare for Rangers actually to get into firefights with the insurgents. That was really done by the military. So my great-grandfather, Paulino Cerda, had the keys for the ranches in that area. So if you need to get from ranch to ranch and get through the gates, he had the keys for the locks. The insurgents come and they tell him, we need to get through the ranch, right? So what are you going to do? You're going to say no to these guys who are armed, right? And your family's right there. So he let him pass through with that, and that was a pretext then for him being claimed as a bandit sympathizer and for being executed. He was being questioned with his father by his side, so that's why they were both killed. And my great-grandmother was within earshot of the shooting.
Trinidad Gonzalez is a history and Mexican-American studies instructor at South Texas College in McAllen. He's a co-founder of Refusing to Forget and is the author of the recent report, A Matter of Justice, The Uninvestigated Homicides of La Matanza. When we come back, sometimes written records were not enough to positively identify people killed during the Matanza. Trinidad Gonzalez did the next best thing.
But what I ended up doing is just going to cemetery and then looking at dates, and of those dates correlated with 1915, and then cross-checking it with the list of names I had.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for this podcast of Fronteras comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Desiderio Flores and his two sons were murdered in 1915 by Texas Rangers in their own home in a fatal case of mistaken identity. Witnesses say the Rangers left, saying they felt like killing more Mexicans. Juan N. Rodriguez was killed in September 1915, dragged with a wire around his neck, and shot. The Texas Ranger report that day stated, quote, "Nothing to report." Up to 14 people, including a clerk, a waiter, and a storekeeper, were rounded up by Texas Rangers later that month in the city of Alamo. They were hanged and shot and left out for the buzzards. These are just a few examples of the ethnic Mexicans who were killed in acts of state-sanctioned violence in a five-month period in 1915. Trinidad Gonzalez has pored through records to try to identify the up to 300 people killed in the South Texas counties of Hidalgo, Cameron, Willacy, and Kennedy. Those records included Texas Ranger scouting reports, a so-called list of dead Mexicans by Frank C. Pierce, testimony from a 1919 state legislative hearing investigating Texas Ranger violence against ethnic Mexicans, and other documents. Gonzalez published his findings in the report, A Matter of Justice, The Uninvestigated Homicides of La Matanza. Not everyone could be identified. Dates and locations of some deaths could not be approximated. Gonzalez hopes that his report will be a tool for genealogists and historians who might be able to dig deeper and help families find closure with the information that's available.
If you ever do genealogy work, you always put dates and ranges, for instance, to try to capture as much data as you can and then sift through that data to get to the person you're looking for. Well, first I should note to the listeners that there's three reports of listed names of people who were killed. One by Mexican consul in Rio Grande City. That report actually has my great-grandfather listed and the individuals who were killed. A list by Frank Pierce, a individual from Brownsville who kept a running list of individuals killed. And then a third list by Jesse Bettis, a Texas Ranger who wrote a memoir. And that memoir is actually be found at the Center for American History at UT Austin archive. And he lists some names. So what I did was I was collating the list of names to create this report, right? Which was a very tedious work because, again, the approximate, so one spelling by one individual making a report might be different from another individual. And when you do genealogy work, that's going to happen as well. So you'll play with different spellings as you would look for people. So genealogies are very skilled at doing that kind of research. My job was to give a data set with each individual case for the individuals killed as easily accessible to the wider public as possible. And that's why the report is written by case by case and date by date and location to location for the information that is approximate that I know. Now, concerning specific dates, I know specific dates from my ancestors that was different from the report from the Mexican consul because I have the actual dates on the tombstones. And so what I was trying to do for this report, but I realized it's going to be too time-consuming, was going cemetery by cemetery and doing searches for individuals, right? So if I knew a location, then I'd try to do cemeteries in that area. But what I ended up doing is just going cemetery and then looking at dates, and of those dates correlated with 1915, and then cross-checking it with the list of names I had. And also, if there was not a list of names, but we knew of an individual unnamed but killed in that time period as well, then trying to make that possible connection between that tombstone and somebody whose name was not listed but matches or aligns somewhat with the date of an individual killed. I realized I could not do that. That was going to delay the report probably another year or so with the kind of research that's going to take.
Well, you do mention, and a lot of people know now, that the Texas Rangers were behind a lot of these murders, and you use a lot of the Texas Ranger reports within this report, and you also include the so-called lists of dead Mexicans also, and you use them as a sort of a correlation point, because those Texas Ranger reports, they don't just come out and say, we killed blank Mexicans. They give the locations of where they were. Maybe they'll say there was nothing to report, but they don't out and out say that they had deadly encounters with so-called Mexican bandits. So it's really interesting how you sort of lay out this case using that cross-referencing.
Right. So the scouting portion of the Texas Rangers, because they were using automobiles and they had to keep mileage, will indicate where, quote, they scouted to for their monthly reports, and that they give dates and approximate locations. The Flores killings, they actually, Captain Ransom refers to them as Guzman in his report, but it's really the Flores killings. He got the names wrong. And that might make sense because based on the affidavit of the daughter who witnessed her father and brother and uncle get killed, they told them later that it was a mistake. They had mistakenly killed the wrong guys, and there was nothing else that could be done. That was a response to the murder of her relatives. So him naming them Guzman and report when it was the wrong people who were killed sort of makes sense, right, that those records would conflict. But based on the contextual information we have, it makes now sense why they conflicted, because Ransom was certainly looking for other people, and he just arbitrarily killed these individuals instead. So the scouting reports, again, are about the mileage that each of the Rangers had to submit to the edited journal to get reimbursed for their cost. And because both people who participated and written autobiographies about their participation in these events, all note, I haven't found anybody who's written a memoir about this time period and doesn't note this, that there was excess killings. Right now, I think they're moderating their descriptions of it because obviously they participated and they don't want to be seen as, you know, fully endorsing these killings. So you got to take it with that sort of lens and understanding the writings. But no one doesn't say that this was wrong. And again, the state of Texas in 1919 points out that these killings were wrong, right? And that the Rangers were responsible for many of them. Now, the Rangers that are not involved with certain killings at this time period are also responsible because they never prosecuted the murderers. So it was a time period of impunity, what you would call a reign of terror against ethnic Mexicans, because anybody, either law enforcement or non-law enforcement, who stated that they were doing these killings because they felt they were bandits was felt as justified and needed to be held accountable. This was to such an extent, they actually created blacklists of individuals for targeting to be killed. And they didn't say murder or kill, they said evaporated. That was their term, right? They didn't want to claim what they're doing was an act of a homicide, but as something as just innocuous as they evaporated, they simply ceased to exist.
And you also use what you had brought up earlier was the 1919 hearing by J.T. Canales, who investigated the Ranger killings. Those excerpts from that report or from those hearings are also included in this report. We talked about the state legislature earlier. Do you think that perhaps they might say, well, we've already done that over 100 years ago. Why do we need to do it again? What's the importance still of this 1919 hearing to what you are reporting now?
Canales, during that 1919 investigation, and by the way, I should clarify for the audience. So Canales initiates, after the Port Benet massacre, legislation to reform the Texas Rangers. In particular, he wanted them to be bonded like sheriffs and all other law enforcement in the state of Texas. And to be bonded, somebody has to trust you as a law enforcement officer that you're not going to go and arbitrarily do bad things, because then the bondholder is responsible for any litigation or penalties that comes out as a result of that. Canales started to make headway in the legislature. He was getting enough votes to possibly pass the reform legislation. So the hearing was actually a political ploy by the governor and the adjutant general and Ranger defenders, who argued that, and they actually sends a letter to the legislature saying, look, we're getting accused of all these things that supposedly we did that were wrong, and we're not being allowed our due process to defend ourselves against these accusations, and therefore we should have a hearing. So the hearing or the investigation of the Rangers itself was a political ploy to slow down the momentum Canales was generating in the legislature. And, you know, they wanted to have a sham hearing to protect the Rangers. But what ended up happening is that it did the opposite, right? It actually brought forth the truth about the indiscriminate killing of individuals. And so the second line of defense was to say, well, those individuals are no longer Texas Rangers, but none of those Rangers who are identified as engaged in those killings have ever been indicted, right? Other than a couple of them, and those people did some killings in 1918 or 1917, not 1915. So none of the individuals involved in 1915 have ever been held accountable by the state of Texas. So when we have that investigation, it is so bad that the archivist for the state of Texas seals it for 50 years, right? So if they were fine with it, they would have released it. Now, in 1919, what they do release is their final report. And so what's in the appendix of my report is that final report where they have their findings, right? And if you read that final report, they're going to exonerate the adjutant general, and they're going to argue that the bad Rangers are gone. We cleaned up the Ranger force, and therefore there's no need for any real reform other than to give a pay raise for people on the force. But they acknowledge that the killings occurred. Again, they didn't want the report itself or the testimony to come out for 50 years because it's pretty damning. So when we look at the investigation, a very important document in the history of Texas, its original intent was to create a defense for the Rangers, but what ended up happening is expose the Rangers' atrocities.
Well, we now know most of these individuals' names who were murdered thanks to work from individuals like you on refusing to forget. And since we know their names, how difficult has it been to get that documentation? And why is it so important to have that official documentation of their deaths?
Because at the time, they just never called the grand jury investigations of the homicides, right? They just never investigated. They just let it go because the authorities in the various counties that I'm talking about did not want to bring official investigations of these murders. I should add one final point, going back to the Canales hearings, is that J.T. Canales did try to submit the Pierce list of dead Mexicans to the committee to be recorded as a documentation. The attorney representing the Rangers, or the attorneys, I should say, objected, noting that not everyone on that list was killed by Texas Rangers, and this was a focused hearing solely on Texas Ranger activity, and therefore their image would be besmirched by including names of individuals who were killed not by them. And so until I sent that letter with the list of those names, the state of Texas has never had a record of those names, named individuals that were identified as being killed. I also should note that we have a list about 100-something, maybe, named individuals and some unnamed individuals where we know the location and date when they were killed. But we probably have just as many individuals who were killed that we know nothing about, neither names, dates, or locations, because everyone agrees that maybe it was from 200, 300 people that were killed in this time period.
Why is it so important to have that documentation? What's the symbolism behind that?
Dignity. It means your life mattered.
So have you heard at all yet from the DAs, from Hidalgo, Camarillo?
I began a conversation with the district attorney, Hidalgo County, and I'm starting there first. That's my home county. Obviously, that's where my ancestors were killed. It's also the county with the largest number of known individuals who were killed. I've had a conversation with the district attorney. He's looking at the report. Of course, he has to do legal research and all that to see how to address my request. But he was amenable to it, at least at this point. But, of course, he has to do his due diligence as the district attorney to see how this can be approached. I was rejected offhand. He wasn't even aware of this history, so he's becoming aware of this history himself.
Would it require any sort of, you know, special investigations by these DAs in order to be able to issue death certificates that have homicide?
The DA does not issue death certificates. That would be a probate court. So this is just merely trying to get them to acknowledge that the homicides occurred. Getting death certificates for the individuals would be a different process.
But that would be included, that would sort of be along the sort of the chain of action that happens once maybe the DA decides to take action on your report?
I mean, honestly, we're in uncharted water right now. The individuals killed in the Puerto Vinín massacre about, what, 3-4 months ago, a probate judge finally issued death certificates for those 15 individuals. By the way, that acknowledgement of those Puerto Vinín massacres with death certificates, I think it was a couple-year process of them trying to figure out how to actually get this done through what the statutes are in the state of Texas. I don't think, and I could be wrong, but I don't think there'd be any statutory obstacles for simply acknowledging that homicides occurred. Whereas the death certificate, there's actual bureaucratic processes yet to follow that can be difficult with the amount of time period that has elapsed.
Trinidad Gonzalez is a history and Mexican-American studies instructor at South Texas College in McAllen. He's a co-founder of Refusing to Forget and is the author of the recent report, A Matter of Justice, The Uninvestigated Homicides of La Matanza. Read the report at tpr.org. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.